You're watching Tim Topham TV. This is episode 29. G'day everyone and welcome to episode 29 of the Tim Topham TV podcast. Wherever you're watching or listening or whatever you're doing, thank you so much for joining me today when we're talking about the Suzuki Piano Method with the fantastic Rebecca Martin. Now, I've been interested in the Suzuki Piano Method ever since I started teaching, and it's not something that I've ever been exposed to. I certainly wasn't taught that method myself as a child, and I didn't know any teachers personally who taught it. So I found Rebecca through blogging. I think she was someone who was reading my articles and things, and we got chatting, and I found out through other means that she is a Suzuki teacher, an incredibly experienced Suzuki teacher. And so we had a fantastic chat on this interview all about the method and how it works. So let me tell you just a quick bit about Rebecca. She finished her master's degree in piano performance and pedagogy from the University of Colorado in Boulder in 1976, and she's been teaching and performing ever since then. She's played in bands for over 30 years. She teaches all ages starting from age 3, offering lessons in jazz, classical, blues, general improvisation, and music theory. She believes that anyone can learn to improvise, and she especially enjoys working with piano teachers who want to help their children improvise. And we got talking in this episode, you'll enjoy it, about creativity and improvisation and those things which are very close to my heart as well, for anyone who is a regular viewer will know. So it was great to talk about those things and ways that she teaches improvisation as well as the Suzuki method. Now, she's been using the Suzuki method for beginner students since 2016, that's 30 years. I've taught masterclasses and improvisation at Suzuki Summer Institutes for over 20 years. So Rebecca is absolutely, one of the most experienced out there. She knows her stuff really, really well and gives us such a great background to this fantastic teaching method. So we talk about Dr. Suzuki. We talk about the ages, the impact of parents. We talk about reading, because I ask one of my questions that I have always wondered about Suzuki teaching and the role of reading music. We just get a really good overview of how it works and how you might incorporate some of the aspects of Suzuki style teaching into your studio if that's of interest to you. So today's show notes will be at timtopham.com/episode 29. And as always, if you get a chance and haven't done so already and you're enjoying these podcasts and you're getting a lot out of them, please, please, please head over to timtopham.com/iTunes. I would love for you to leave a review so that we can move up in the ratings on iTunes. It would be a great help. So without further chat, let's get on to the interview today with Rebecca Martin. Here's the interview all about Suzuki Piano Method. Well, g'day from Melbourne, Rebecca Martin. So great to have you on the show.
Well, it's great to finally get to meet you, even though it's via Skype. It's just great. I love what you're doing and I read all your stuff. So it's great to meet you finally.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's wonderful to, make use of the resources that we've got in the people that are connected to my blog, and I love sharing ideas. So I'm really glad that you're able to help us out today. And I think you mentioned just before that it's snowing or close to for you. For me, it's going to be 35, I think, on Christmas Day, and we're recording this a few days before Christmas Day. So and that's 35 Celsius. So that's, almost 80, I think, for you guys. So
I would trade you probably, but it's not to have a white Christmas.
I know. It's so weird in Australia because we still do all the Christmassy stuff, and it's why we sing songs about white Christmases and all that. And over here, of course, it's just stinking hot. Anyway, let's get into the show. Today we're talking about the Suzuki Piano Method. So, I've heard bits and pieces. I wasn't trained in Suzuki and I've had no experience in it. So that's why I wanted to get someone on the show who knew a little bit about it. And I'm sure there's other teachers around who are also unsure and interested. So, why don't we just get straight into it? And do you want to just tell us what's the Suzuki Method all about?
Yes, I would love to share this with you because I was on the traditional track. I started piano lessons when I was 6 years old in Virginia, in the United States. Went straight through college, got a Bachelor of Arts degree in music, went to graduate school, got a Master of Music from the University of Colorado, and started teaching piano. And there was an MTA, Music Teachers National Association, event called Achievement Day, and I was an adjudicator at that event. And I saw these teeny little students coming in and playing Bach minuets, and they were like 6 years old, and it totally blew me away. So at the end of that day, I sought out that teacher and just said, how did you get all the talented students? And she said, well, it's not that at all. It's the Suzuki method. And if you would like to start coming to my house and watching me teach, you're welcome to. And this was radical back then. I started teaching Suzuki, oh, I don't even remember. It was like 1986. So back then, it seemed like most teachers were very guarded about information. No one was really sharing much. And to think that somebody would let me come into their home and just see everything they were doing was remarkable. So I did start going to her house. And in the Suzuki method, lots of times you overlap students' lessons so that families are constantly coming in. They're watching each other. They're staying maybe 10 or 15 minutes into the next lesson. Somebody else will come and be observing them. So you've just got this big group of people who are just sitting there watching this person teach. And I decided that's what I wanted to do.
Fantastic.
So that summer, they have these Suzuki summer institutes all over the United States. And they're kind of like summer music camps, where the children can go and they take master classes, but they also take all kinds of enrichment classes. It goes on for about 4 days, and parents go along with them, go to the classes. So I decided that summer that I would start my training, and I really went in as a skeptic. I went in with my hands crossed over my chest, like convinced. And I'm not one to pick up the latest craze, but at the end of that week, I was convinced that it was something I wanted to explore. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting to hear the backstory. And I'm really interested to hear you talk about this teacher who opened her, I assume her, was it, a female?
Yes. Her name is Beverly Fest. She became my own children's piano teacher because at that point I had a daughter who was 2, and I was waiting until she was 3 to start lessons. And at that point, Beverly was starting to cut back her studio and she wasn't going to be teaching that much. And I begged her. I said, oh, you have to. So I had I got to watch her teach for, 8 or 10 years.
Wow.
Because my daughter went through lessons with her and then my son did. So I was getting this continual teacher training all the time. And I think that the thing that Beverly taught me the most was how to listen, just how to listen to a student and right away assess what needs to be fixed here and how can you do it in a loving way and get the best product out of this student. And I'm forever grateful to her.
Yeah. Do you think it was a product of the Suzuki method that she was so open to having people watch her teach, or was it just she was happy with it?
No, that's the way it is. And when Suzuki, Shinichi Suzuki started the method, that's what it was all about. People came and watched and families came. And I guess his lessons could just go on and on and on because he would see one child after another and you'd be there for hours. So when it came over to the United States, the first tour group, I believe, came to the United States in around 1964. And people started really being very curious about this way of learning, started going to Japan and watching him teach. So I think the people who went to Japan and brought that back to the United States set it up the way that he did, where my studio is welcome, please come, please bring your children and just be quiet in the studio and sit and learn and listen and have your children inspired by the lessons that they're watching as well.
Mm. Well, look, you better tell us a little bit about Suzuki himself, if you know a tiny bit of his background and how he actually came to do this and what instruments he worked with originally.
Yes, absolutely. His father had a factory or a workshop that made traditional Japanese stringed instruments. And then he got very interested in the violin, the Western violin. So he started making violins and developed this huge factory that was a very large violin factory. So Suzuki's worked there. He taught himself how to play the violin. He got very interested in violin. And somebody approached him to teach their child. And he knew nothing about teaching the violin. And he had this sort of aha moment when he was looking around thinking, how am I going to do this? And he had this little aha moment that all Japanese children learn how to speak Japanese. And that seems very simplistic, but when you think about it, Japanese is a very difficult language. English is a very difficult language, but all children learn how to speak their native language. So he felt like if he could approach playing an instrument the same way that you learn to speak, that that might be a way to do it. And indeed it was.
Mm. So we were talking about Dr. Suzuki. And he, so yes, he started with the violin.
Yes.
And how did he, do you know about how he actually came to this method? Or did it kind of just grow out of what he was doing?
I think it just grew out of what he was doing in terms of, they call it the mother tongue approach.
Right.
And it's just that it's listening to music, repeating what you hear, and adding on to that. And they're talking about when you have a little baby and maybe they're getting to be around 10 months old and you're just dying for them to say mama or dada or something, and you say it over and over and over. And finally, that little baby just looks at you and says, mama. And then you don't stop saying mama. You say, yes, mama, mama. And how about dada? And so you're adding on to what they already know. And it's the same with music. You start out with what they call the twinkle variations. And there are variations on Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And that is the very beginning of the method. You use those exercises to develop posture at the piano, correct hand position, focus, like a get ready, go kind of position before you allow them to play anything. And with the little violins, they're holding little boxes up for a while until they actually get the instrument. So it was a way to start music where you're starting pretty simply, but then building on those concepts.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard about the Twinkle Twinkle variations. I knew that was a part of the Suzuki method. Is that the same for every instrument?
Yes, yes. Okay. And I believe the violins have an extra one. With piano, we have three rhythmic variations, and then we have the actual Twinkle Twinkle Little Star song.
Right.
So I think the violins have an extra rhythmic variation, but even the first variation is rhythmically pretty advanced for a beginning student. The rhythm is, that's the first note. So that would be the rhythm that you're playing on the piano. And lots of times with traditional methods, you're just starting with maybe a quarter note to a quarter note or a whole note. And this is just like, has a great rhythmic vitality already to it.
So they play da 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 on one note, and that's the first note.
Yes, and then they go up. Then you would do every note.
Da, na, na, da, da, da.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Exactly.
I was going to ask what if I was watching a beginner Suzuki lesson, like someone a student learning in the first couple of months or something of lessons. What would you say is the key difference that I would notice? Well, maybe two or three key differences between that and any other kind of piano training.
Going back to when I first started taking piano, I wanted to take when I was really little, but the lady down the street that my mother was going to send me to didn't take students until they were six. So I waited until I was six and I was so excited to go, but I was just sent down the street and I knocked on her door and I went into her home. In a Suzuki lesson, you're going to have the child and the parent coming to the lesson. The child has already been listening to the music that's in book one before they ever come to the lesson. And they've probably been listening quite a bit. The parent has also been listening to the music. Lots of teachers will have parent education classes before they even start lessons. So the parent knows what to expect, how to work with the child at home, and generally just what the experience is going to be like. In my lessons, I would have the beginning child, play with me for about 10 or 15 minutes, depending on how long they can sit at the bench. It depends on what the age is. And then the parent would sit and have the rest of the lesson while the child colored or played with toys that I have or whatever.
Really? How interesting. So it really is about teaching the parents as much as the student. The parents are learning at the same time. Is that right?
Totally and completely.
So this does not work unless the parents are 100% invested in this.
Yes, I will say that it works the best if they're 100% invested.
Okay.
You can be amazed by what can be accomplished if the parent isn't 100% invested, but it's going to work best if they are.
Okay.
However, this can also work for adult students, but they're working on their own. The difference is that they're listening to a CD at home or music at home, so they know what the pieces sound like. So it helps with rhythm, it helps with continuity, it helps hearing rhythms. That's kind of basically the difference, is that they're listening to the music and hearing the music before they play it, and they are picking out the notes by ear.
Yeah, okay. And so I wouldn't see them reading music, at least at the start.
No, you would not.
So it's all about playing what you hear, copying what the teacher's playing, those sort of things. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. It is. When you think about it, that's what Suzuki was getting at too, that we don't make children be able to read words in books before we allow them to speak. Why should we make a musician have to read music before we allow them to play the instrument? Mm. It makes total sense. I mean, when I look back, I wish that I had had this when I was little, because I just think it would have been great to just jump in. I mean, I was chomping at the bit and had to wait till I was 6, but I could have done it when I was 3, and I would have, you know what I mean? And it's so ingrained. If you start them that early, they really, really have it.
Mm. I was going to ask what age this method works for. I think you've kind of covered it. You haven't mentioned anyone younger than 3 at this stage, and you've also mentioned adults. So what is the age range?
I think that ideally between probably 3 and 5 is a good time to start.
Okay.
It really depends on the child. Not all children are ready to start piano lessons. And it's, in my view, since I had my own children go through Suzuki piano lessons, as a parent, you have to decide what is important to me for my child. You don't ask a 3-year-old if they want to learn how to play the piano. You don't ask them if they want to brush their teeth. You don't ask them if they want to eat a piece of broccoli. You decide what's important for your child, and you base it on those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can start them, my daughter was able to start when she was 3, but she was very focused and would sit and color. My son was bouncing off the walls. He wasn't ready to start until he was 5. So it depends on the child. I have started beginners as old as 8 or 9 or 10. It just depends. It depends.
Okay. But primarily, I guess it sounds like the method is really suited for the young beginner, the really young beginner.
Yes.
And younger than, I assume most piano teachers would probably start taking on students at about age 7 or 8 an average. So it's significantly younger than that because, as you say, it's about listening.
Yes.
Rather than having to read. And look, it makes total sense to me too. And I think it's probably why I like improvising and exploring sounds with students before I start focusing quite so much on reading.
It's absolutely true. And in my experience, since I've played in jazz and rock bands my whole life, I love to teach people how to improvise. It's just my passion. And I find that with Suzuki students, they learn so fast. They pick stuff off the radio and off YouTube much faster than me because they've been trained to do that since they were 3 years old. They hear, they're just so quick at matching tones because they've been doing it their life.
Mm. So do you find they definitely have a better ear when it comes to, you know, you probably don't necessarily do oral tests, but for our exams over here, you know, they have to pick out intervals or sing back notes and things like that. So they would naturally be better at those kind of activities.
Hard to say, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
I don't know in terms of an exam kind of situation, but certainly with what I do with playing pop music, they pick it up so fast.
Mm. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I found a couple of quotes by Dr. Suzuki, I thought, which sounded interesting, and I wondered whether you could flesh them out and talk about how that would look in a lesson, perhaps. The two quotes, the first one was character first, ability second. And the second quote I found was, he said, nurtured by love.
Yes.
And I like the sound of these two, but can you go into those two a little bit more?
Yes, there's another really famous quote of his that is, where love is deep, much can be accomplished.
Mm.
And I really love that quote as well. And it's like the nurtured by love and the character first, ability second, because he thought that teaching a student how to play an instrument and introducing them to the whole world of music would build a better person, a sweeter person, a person with a bigger heart, a kinder heart. I can't argue with that.
No, I don't think anyone can.
So his thinking was, if you have a child who's in a warm, loving family and you've got this parental support and you've got parents who are playing music for this child all the time and being really supportive of what they're doing, then you're going to get a big, huge product out of this musician as well, because they have the support and they have the joy of making music.
So do the parents actually sit with the child when they practice the whole time?
Yes.
So it's actually, I mean, that would be a very, a great way to get parents interacting with their children even more than they would otherwise be, perhaps. I mean, because it's so easy for parents to just go, you know, Johnny, go and practice. get out, go and make, you know, shut the door, I don't want to hear it sort of thing. But this is completely different, isn't it?
Yes, and I feel like I can be an expert because I was the Suzuki mom with my own two children. Yeah. And my two children now are 26 and 31 years old. And now I get to know how they felt about that. How did you feel about doing all these piano lessons and me sitting with you every day? Yeah. And thank goodness they're old enough to really appreciate the music background that they had. And a case in point, my daughter is visiting me right now for the holidays, and she's an attorney in California. And we're having this big party on Christmas Eve, and a lot of the kids that she grew up with, who were Suzuki students as well, are going to be at this Christmas party, and we all decided that we would play some music. So she sat down today. She hasn't had a piano in years, and she sat down, and we played some Christmas carols together, and I said, honey, how can you still do this? And she said, because, Mom, I started when I was 3. I think it's just in there.
It doesn't surprise me. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you're happy mom.
That's what I hoped for. But the other thing about the whole Suzuki community, first of all, what I mentioned about the sharing of information. And now, I don't know how old you are, but back in 1986.
I was quite young.
Yeah, that's sure. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have YouTube videos. If I wanted a student to listen to a piece of music, they had to go to the University of Colorado Listening Library, and you would hope that they had the record, and you could sit in a little booth and you could hear the record. And if you couldn't hear the record, then you had to order it from a record store, and it took 6 weeks to get it. Now it's just instantaneous, and I love that about the internet. But with Suzuki teachers who were so willing to share everything, and particularly when you go to those summer institutes. In the summer institutes, they have classes for children, but they also offer teacher training sessions. They keep redoing the books, and I don't know how many piano books there are now. I think 7, I can't remember. And very serious Suzuki teachers go to these institutes, and they take a whole week-long class on that book. Okay. So you have a master teacher there who's telling you everything. This is how I teach hand position. This is how I do scales. This is how, and I love that about the Suzuki method, that for the first time in my life, everybody was sharing everything about the way they do things. And that's why I love your thing so much, is because we're all, whether it's Suzuki or traditional, we're all just trying to get people to make music. And it doesn't make a difference how you do it. You're just trying to get them to have music for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I hope the environment of sharing, the concept of sharing, is becoming more common. And if I can have a place in helping that happen with piano teachers, then, you know, my job's done almost. Because, it's just so, so crucial. The old closed, I call it the closed door studio policy, I think, is a dying breed, hopefully. And people are just getting out there and sharing more ideas. So I hope there are more teachers out there like your teacher who just welcomed everyone to watch and get involved and listen, just be quiet and learn. I think it's just
exactly.
Great. Yeah.
Exactly. The thing about taking your children to the summer institutes too is that you just meet other families who are as serious about having music education for their children as you are. And you form these lifelong friendships with other families, and they come from all over. Mm. It's not a local thing. So I think that part is really fun too. I still get together with some of the families that my children grew up with playing piano.
It's great. I think it's obviously quite a community, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Now, with regard to parents too, I just made a little note while you were talking. You mentioned obviously adults don't have their parents, they teach themselves, but they use the same method. I'm wondering with teenagers, I teach a lot of teenagers, and they're how they, you know, at that stage of their life, parent contact isn't obviously necessarily the most positive thing happening. Can they do it without their parents? Like, is there an age kind of where it flips?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And there's always this process of figuring out when it's time for the parent to stop coming to the lessons.
Okay.
And that, again, that depends on the child. But little by little, you ease them into, just like traditional students where you're practicing on your own. You have your notebook and you have all the practice spots that your teacher wrote down. And you hope that for every student that they can become independent. So at some point, the parent isn't coming to my lessons anymore. It just depends on the age. If you start a teenager, I just did this about a year ago. A girl had wanted to play for a long time, and she was 14. And the reason I like to start with Suzuki is just because I'm so familiar with how to get a good hand position and posture and tone production and everything out of the instrument using that literature. And every teacher has that. Whether you use Faber or you use Bastion or you use whatever you use, you get familiar with how you can get results out of that particular method. So with Suzuki students, if they're teenagers or if they're adults, they don't have anybody sitting with them, but they're listening to the music. That's the big thing. Mm. They're listening to the music so they know what it sounds like.
Mm. The whole listening before reading. That's just the crucial thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Or one of them anyway. Yeah. And you kind of mentioned, or I got from that you teach a little bit of, with some students, you use some Suzuki ideas, but not completely Suzuki. It sounds like, can you kind of come and go? If you've got some training in it, can you go, you know, I'm going to use a bit more Suzuki with this student, or I'm going to start them here and then I'm going to go to another method or whatever? Or is it, you're a Suzuki teacher, you do it from start to finish until they're advanced?
No, there's a lot of freedom. And in the Suzuki community, you're going to find teachers who go tock, tock, tock through all the books, and that's it. And then you're going to find teachers like me who go through some of the books with some of the kids and do a lot of supplemental literature, a lot of improvisation, pop music, all kinds of stuff. It just boils down to the teacher and what they feel comfortable teaching.
Okay. Yeah, it's good to know.
But I would say right now in my studio, I have one 10-year-old who's in at the end of book 6, which is really, really, really advanced. She was just in a concerto competition last week. And then I have other students who they make it to the Beethoven Sonata in book 4 and they're done.
Right.
And they say, I don't want to play Suzuki anymore. But really, they just don't like that sonata. They want to play something else.
Okay.
So you know what it's like. As the teacher, you've just got to be standing on your head saying, well, do you like this or do you like that? Or you think, well, I can teach that same technique if I pick a Mozart or a Haydn or something else that's going to do the same thing for that student. But I think that's the continual challenge of being a teacher, is to find out what kind of music really turns somebody on to keep them going, and particularly teenagers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the hardest things sometimes. So tell me a little bit about the training, because there might be students, teachers who are listening and going, oh, this sounds kind of interesting. How do you learn about how to teach this method? Even if you didn't want to revolutionize your teaching, as we've just said, you just want to try it with some students, or you think it's going to work. How does it work?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. The main website for Suzuki of any questions is the Suzuki Association of the Americas. So if you just Google that in, you'll come up on their website, and there's all kinds of information there on how to do it. Soon, the whole directory will come out for all the summer institutes, which states they have them in, what the dates are, what kind of courses they're teaching. So you might have a cello book 4 teacher training, or you might have violin book 7 teacher training, or you might have piano. It's all different. Some institutes really focus on strings. Other ones have piano. So then if you decide as a teacher that you want to become a Suzuki teacher, then you go to one of those classes.
Okay.
You might, you know, pick somewhere. I taught for 16 years at the Alaska one.
Oh,
so
wow.
I would go to Alaska every summer.
Oh, wow. So I've always wanted to go to Alaska.
Yeah, maybe you want to take your family and combine a vacation in Alaska for a week, and then you could tour around. Or you can go anywhere and do it.
So it's a little bit like a conference with different streams or different focuses. And you go, you absorb the information. Are you then tested on it somehow, or is it you just free to try it out and see how you go?
Kind of a little bit of both. And to get started in it at all, you have to submit an audition tape, first of all. You've got to prove that you can.
Performing or teaching?
Yeah. Yes, of performing.
Okay.
So you have a basic proficiency level, and I'm not sure anymore what that is, but it would be on the website. So mm-hmm. maybe if you're going to teach book one, you have to prove that you can play the pieces in book four. I'm not sure how it goes.
Okay.
So you send the audition tape, and then if you make it past that, then you sign up for the class. And the class is rigorous. I mean, you are in class all day, every day for about a week, and it's a lot of information. And since it's at an institute, there are all kinds of master classes and enrichment classes going on. So then as part of your training, you go and observe these teachers and you teach, you observe all these classes, and then you write critiques and you say, you know, this is what I learned from this teacher and whatever. So you're submitting some written work at the same time. Usually you get a couple of lessons yourself on some of the pieces in the book. This is in front of the class, of course.
I'll never forget.
When I did book one, I had a master's degree in piano. I'm taking book one, which is...
No.
And it came like my day to play Goodbye to Winter, and I was just like shaking, like, oh my gosh, but...
I'm assuming this is quite an easy piece in reality, but...
Yeah, it is. Totally. So you do that, and then there's not a certification. There's just a registration. So you can advertise yourself as a Suzuki teacher who has registered books 1 through 7, or there's even a starting class now called Every Child Can. And that's really what they believe, that every child can learn how to play an instrument. Every child, not just one that supposedly has talent or inborn this or that. No, every child can do it. You just have to have, you have to put in the work and, like you said, surround it with love and hope for the best. And it's just great.
Now, I've heard piano teachers bemoan the fact that Suzuki students have trouble reading. And this is a little bit of a common thing that I hear about Suzuki training. So I wondered if this is a fair comment or if it's a bit of a myth.
I think a little bit of both. When I knew you were going to ask me this, because I get asked all the time, or somebody will say, well, how do you start young children? And I say, I'm a Suzuki teacher. And they go, oh, that's the method where they don't teach them how to read. It's like, really? Talk about that. Okay, first of all, reading music, I think I read somewhere where it's one of the top 10 most difficult things to learn how to do. When you think about it, it's this complex system of hieroglyphics that you have up in front of your face, and you're supposed to translate that into playing sometimes 8 notes at a time down here. I mean, it's difficult. It's really difficult. And in my experience, and I've been at this for a long, long time, it seems in my studio over the years, now this is a generalization, but it seems like you get students who are really quick memorizers, or you get students who are really good readers. Lots of times you don't get both, because lots of times the memorizers are not really good readers, and if they can get through it one time, they know how to just memorize it, so then they don't have to read it anymore. This is a generalization, but I have seen this a lot. I would challenge any teacher who gets a transfer student from another teacher to say, this student is a great reader. This student is a great improviser. This student is really focused. Music reading is difficult. Sometimes I think if you get Suzuki teachers who only go through the repertoire in the books and they're not playing a lot of supplemental literature, then yes, their reading is not going to be as good as it could be, because in my view, you got to read a lot to be a good reader.
Absolutely.
And if you're only learning and this goes true too, not just for Suzuki teachers, but if you're doing, let's say you're doing National Guild auditions, which is something that happens in the United States, and you're preparing what they call a 10-piece program, you spend about your whole year learning those 10 pieces of music, and you don't get to be a good reader because you've only spent your time on those 10 pieces of music during the year. So I think it boils down to, it is the responsibility of the teacher to make sure that the student can read. So you're going to have some Suzuki teachers who don't focus on reading, and you're going to have some that do, just like you have traditional teachers who produce students who aren't that great a reader either.
I see. When is reading introduced officially in the Suzuki? I assume there's books by the sounds of things. When is that actually introduced from like when they start? Like how many years in or months in sort of thing?
You're just asking me the best questions. I love this. It depends on the child. Because sometimes, I mean, obviously, if you're working with a three-year-old, you're probably not going to have them reading music.
Sure.
But you might. You might get this incredible three-year-old that's ready to read music. Basically, I like them to sort of get into book one. I want that ear established. I want that ear really established before I'm asking them to read something on top of it. So it might be in the middle of, certainly by the middle of book one, if they're 5 years old, I'm going to start them reading. And sometimes I start them at the same time. It's like we have our reading book and we have our Suzuki book. But it really depends on the child. And I get this question a lot too. Well, how long is it going to, like what you just asked me, well, how long is it going to take me to get through book one?
Yeah. In fact, I just wrote down, how do you know when they're ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to know when they're ready. And sometimes if you use those little pre-reading things where they're just having the dots, maybe their colors or something on the staff, and maybe the child sees that at home and they really want to read music, they're going to let you know when they're ready.
Mm.
But I think three is too early. I think it just depends. But three is too early. Five's a good age. Four could be good too. It just depends.
Depends on the child, yeah. But look, I've learned a lot because I assumed that the Suzuki method was far more, not structured, but because it's not unstructured, but far more, you know, you must do this at this time with students kind of method. But it's clearly not. And it's not. I also have now learned that it's not something that you have to become. You don't have to suddenly become only a Suzuki teacher and put your hand up and say, that's all I do. No, it can supplement the way that you already teach, which I love because whenever I go to conferences and things, I love the fact that I'm sharing ideas. And I always say to teachers, look, do with this whatever you want. I'm not telling you to revolutionize your teaching. Here are some ideas that you can use. And it sounds like it's a similar thing. If you are trained in Suzuki, you can go, oh, this is a great way to start kids for the first 6 months or a year of their lessons, if they're younger. Well, but maybe if they're teenagers, I won't do that or whatever it is.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And in my estimation, by the time you get to book three, there's the famous Clementi Opus 36, number one, Sonatina. The Kulau Opus 55 is in there, number one. In my estimation, if I can get any child through book three, all the way through book three, then I feel like they have a really solid technique to play anything. Some children want to go through all the books because they've been raised, they might have had siblings who went through all the books, and that's just a big thing. They want to go through the books. Other kids, I think, are just ready to branch out and do other stuff after book three. And there's so much more classical music out there. Just pick what you like.
Mm.
Another thing I wanted to tell you, too, that's a really nice celebration in my studio, and a lot of teachers do this, is we have a book celebration when the book is finished. Suzuki is very, they like you to keep a lot of review pieces under your fingers.
Oh, yes, because I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, technically, then you've got a lot. Because when you're working on a new piece, if it's you're not exercising your fingers much. You're trying to poke out the notes and figure out where you're going. But if you have this giant repertoire under your fingers, then you're getting the physical benefit from it as well. So at the end of the book, we have a book party at their house. And it's a special thing because I go to their house, where I probably wouldn't if I didn't have this celebration.
Mm.
And they invite friends or family or whatever, and they play through the entire book by memory. They play through the whole book, and then we have a party. And that's just a great celebration of a large chunk of literature.
How many pieces would that be for, you know, book two or three, approximately?
Probably about 12, something like
okay.
that.
Yeah, yeah. Huh? Yeah, there you go. Well, this has been I've learned so much from this. I really, really enjoyed it, and I'm glad to have finally got to be able to speak about the kind of the truth about Suzuki, and not just the myths and the things that we hear and the things that people complain about or whatever it is when we pick up transfer students.
No, I'm so happy to have the opportunity because it's gotten better. I'll say it's gotten better with the myths, as you call them. But when I first started out, there was just a lot of arguing about things, and my whole stance always is what I said. We're just trying to teach people to make music however you approach it.
Mm.
It's just peace. We got gotta all just be together in this because we're all trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, that's right. And I have to say, the concept of listening and playing before you read, as you do when you are reading words, or you know, speaking words and reading books, it does make a hell of a lot of sense, I have to say. And I've certainly changed my teaching from when I started, which was, let's start with page one of book one of this you know, method or whatever, to, you know, really, really breaking that up with lots of improvisationary activities, more listening and that sort of thing. I certainly, nothing like the Suzuki method, but I guess aspects of it, of not jumping into a reading book is a good thing, I think, for most students, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think one reason why I started doing so much more improvisation too is at one point I had a piano student who was, he was just a beginner, but he was actually dying to play guitar. And his parents bought him this guitar, and this was great, but it was kind of cruel. They bought him this electric guitar, and they got it a month before Christmas, and they set it in his room, but he wasn't allowed to take it out of the box until Christmas.
Oh, no.
Telling me every week, I have this guitar. He was so excited when he finally got the guitar, and he came back to his piano lesson after Christmas, and I said, it was probably about a month later, and I said, well, how's the guitar going? And he goes, it's great. I had my first lesson and I can already play a song.
Yeah. Yep.
I went, the guitar players, those are the people having the most fun. Why don't the piano players do that?
Yep.
Guitar teachers just sit around and they teach you a tune and you go home and you play it and you impress your friends. And we're sitting here going, no, you got to read the notes and you got to do this and this. And come on. If a piano student goes to a party, they might sit down and play a movement of one of their sonatas or something. But if they sit down and play something by Alicia Keys or something else, they're totally popular at that party, not because they played a sonatina.
Yeah.
So I feel like they just have to do it all. Mm-hmm. And you can't hold them back. You just have to give them the material and see where they go with it.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on all of those accounts. As you, I think you know, being a reader of mine anyway. And the whole thing about guitars and the way guitar teachers teach, or the way guitarists learn, I've always said, you know, why don't more piano teachers teach some basic ideas about chords? Because
yep.
with a few chords under your belt, you can suddenly play music instantly. Within, you know, a month of lessons, you can play cool stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can. Yeah, I get asked to come and talk to local music teachers associations about how to hang on to teenage students. Because it seems to be a thing where a lot of teachers lose students in the middle school, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade kind of level. That's what I tell them, is that you've got to start letting them play the kind of music that they want to play. And if you don't know how to play it, then you need to learn. Mm. You need to open it up here. And with the internet the way it is now and piano tutorials, there's no excuse. You can sit down and spend 10 minutes and learn a pop tune, and you'll be like a god to your students that you've never done this before, and suddenly they can play Stairway to Heaven on the piano instead of the guitar, and it's just too cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And that whole thing for teenagers about being cool, literally, like you have to take it seriously. If all they've got to play is a Bach invention when they go to their mate's house, it's not going to go down. Nine times out of ten, it's not going to be as cool as something else. Video game music for a lot of the boys I teach, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I think that you said on one of your blogs too that it's so true too. It doesn't have to be the whole song.
Yeah.
If you can just get the cool intro, then their friends will just stand around and go, well, do that again. Play that again. I want to hear that again. And they'll call in their friends. Oh, he can do, and it's not even the whole thing.
Yeah.
But
that's
in order
right.
for the keep on going, it just really helps for them to get some admiration from their peers, a little support
from
their peers.
Yeah, gives them a good buzz and makes them want to do it more. Okay. Well, look, I think they're the main questions that I wanted to ask. Is there anything that I haven't asked that I should have that you're thinking, oh, I really have to remember to say this or anything? Or have we covered most of the topics?
Yeah, I think so too. I think that the... that I would have to say that becoming a Suzuki teacher was life-changing for me, because I feel like in my teaching, I mean, I was probably in my late 20s when I started doing this. And I think I was kind of stuck a little bit. I couldn't get students to play advanced enough stuff soon enough that they wouldn't quit taking lessons. And Suzuki Method gets you playing pretty difficult stuff pretty fast, and you're more likely to stick with it if you're playing music that sounds good to you and that sounds advanced enough rather than just five-finger pattern kind of stuff. Mm. So for me, it definitely was life-changing and just gave me the shot in the arm that I needed to go for the next 40 years.
Did you just say 40?
I've been teaching piano for, I bet, 40, yeah, 40
wow.
years.
Wow, gosh.
Yeah, yes, I have, actually. Maybe 41, yeah, long time.
Goodness, oh, that's amazing. Well, I definitely picked the right person for this interview. Thank you so much for your time.
And good luck to you. I'll keep reading all your stuff, and I'll send you stuff that I do, and I'll take stuff that you do, and I'll just love it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And look, if there's any, I don't know if you know of any, intro sheets or summaries or anything like that that I can put on the notes for this show, then email them across and I'll link up to them. And I'll pop a link to the association that you mentioned, of the Americas it was, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I'll assume there's one in Australia and there's one in England and all that kind of stuff. So we'll find all those links.
International Suzuki Association as well, the ISA, but the Suzuki Association of the Americas, they have a very strong program in South America as well.
Okay.
So that's just the best, because then you can also look and see where all those summer institutes are if you're interested in taking some teacher training.
Mm, great stuff. And look, if people have got questions and they'd like to ask you a question, are you happy to just jump online? If people leave a question on the show notes page, I can let you know if there's a question there I can't answer.
I would be happy to do that.
Fantastic.
Yes.
And do you have a website of your own where people can read more about you or anything like that?
Yes. Uh-huh. It's www.rebnotes, and that's spelled rebnotz.com.
Fantastic. We'd say...
Yeah, and you can leave a message through that too.
We'd say... what was it? REBNOTZ. You say Z, don't you?
Yes. I did not know that.
Yeah, Z. Well, maybe that's just me. I'm not sure. Anyway, thank you so much for your time. It's been really lovely to chat with you. I'm sure I'll see you online at some stage soon.
Yeah, maybe I'll see you at a conference. That'd be great.
Yeah, next year. Let's do it.
All right.
All right. Thank you. See ya.
Bye.